Very good. We're ready to go, Mr. Chair. Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the March 12, 2024 meeting of the San Francisco PUC Revenue Bond Oversight Committee. Can we start with a roll call, please?
Roll call. Member Camp. Camp absent. Member Leung.
Present.
Leung present. Vice Chair Boothie.
Present.
Boothie present. Member Visser.
Present.
Visser present. Chair Holober.
Present.
Oliver present. Mr. Chair, we have four members present and we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We are now going to move to item number two, which is for general public comment. This is the opportunity for members of the public to address ARBOC on matters that are not on the agenda today. If you would like to speak, please use the raised hand feature in Teams and we will get to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're doing my job for me. I see that we have one speaker with a hand raised, and once I hear that speaker's voice, I will start the timer for 3 minutes.
Okay. Thank you. My name's Dave Warner. I'm a private enterprise CFO by trade. Thank you for your service. Hopefully you've read my letter provided to you shortly after your last meeting, and you recall the gist of my public comment at that meeting. In short, the SFPUC is facing substantial financial risk, and I don't think leadership understands it. The SFPUC is massively increasing spending in the context of a history of declining water demand. San Francisco water and sewer revenues are based on water demand. The problem is that the financial plans call for flat to increasing demand, and if demand continues to decline, then rates will have to go higher. But the problem with higher rates is the SFPUC is already projecting to bump up against affordability limits. The crux of the problem is that the current proposed budget calls for $11.8 billion in capital spending over the next 10 years. This is a massive number and a big increase from last year. The Water System Improvement Plan, approved back in 2008, was $4.8 billion and was considered massive at the time. This year's $11.8 billion is a stunning number. And to make matters worse, the capital plan is mostly debt financed, so decisions we make now go into our expense run rate for 30 years. You are financial people. You get this issue of overestimating demand and sales and then making big investments based on those projections, along with the long-term nature of the problem because of the debt component. The problem is I don't think SFPUC leadership or the commissioners fully understand this. Neither General Manager Herrera nor COO Flynn have a financial background, and neither do any of the five commissioners. This is an impending major disaster in slow motion. I hope you'll review my letter and ideally pursue this issue, the proposed SFPUC budget and its risks. At a minimum, the SFPUC should understand the risks it is putting on its stakeholders, including ratepayers and bondholders. If you pursue this issue, please ask the SFPUC to present a risk analysis of their proposed budget. I have not seen any slides of this effect. What's the risk to the ratepayer and bondholder if demand doesn't materialize as expected? Their affordability analysis relies heavily on new housing over the next 20 years. What is the impact to ratepayers and bondholders if that projecting housing growth doesn't materialize? As you know, the California Department of Finance in July projected that San Francisco's population will stay relatively flat over the next 20 years. Anyway, you get the idea of what to ask for. There's urgency. As you know, the longer the delay to right-size a financial plan, the more difficult it becomes. And for this 10-year capital plan, 25% of the expenditures is in the first 2 years. If you haven't done so already, I hope you'll read my letter, and I hope you'll include it in the minutes for this meeting. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for sharing your comments. I see that we have another speaker with their hand raised. Could we have that speaker now for 3 minutes of general public comment?
Thank you. My name is Peter Dreckmeyer. I'm the policy director for the Tuolumne River Trust. I've been with the trust for 16 years and have been following the SFPUC closely. And in my opinion, the SFPUC is in an economic death spiral where rates continue to increase, driving per capita consumption down and leading to higher rates once again. The current budget is assuming that 10 years out, demand and sales will be 9 million gallons per day more than last year's projection 10 years out. And this is despite the fact that last year, sales were at the second lowest on record, and water demand has been under 200 million gallons per day for the past 9 years. Yet they're projecting that by 2045, demand is going to reach 244 million gallons per day. So the demand projections have always been off, usually by about 25%. So projecting sales being higher than they're going to be is going to put them in a real quandary. And as Dave just mentioned, they're already expecting to push the affordability target. The big problem is that they're planning for something called the design drought. It combines the two worst droughts from the last century to create a mega drought that would force them to stretch 6 years worth of water into 8.5 years. And therefore, they're projecting either extreme rationing or the need to develop a lot of alternative water supplies. They just released their final alternative water supply plan last month, which, if built out, would add $16 to $25 billion to the budget. So it would essentially double the budget. And the water is not necessary. If they used a reasonable drought planning scenario and reasonable demand projections, we would see that we needed to develop very little water. So the SIPC needs to be audited, not just for the finances, but for their design drought model. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing your comments. Do we have anyone further who has general public comment for agenda item number two at this time? Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you for those comments. General public comment is closed. So we will move to item number three, which is the audit update. And we have a presentation from the audit team.
Good morning, committee chair, members of the committee. This is Hunter Wong with City Services Auditor. Here to just provide a short update on the phase three expenditure audit. The team is continuing to work with PUC stakeholders, various stakeholders in different divisions to obtain information and data for us to continue our field work. Right now, the team is actively in the field work stage. We are performing analysis of the data and the information that we received in order to draft our audit report, essentially. Other than that, that's about the update that we have today. We're going through field work. A lot of the, we have a lot of information to review and analyze. But at this time, nothing else to report out on. Happy to answer any questions, though, from the committee.
Okay. Are there any questions from members of the committee? Okay. And can you remind us of the timeline for this audit as to when we can anticipate next steps or some type of a draft report?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Chair. I believe what we had mentioned last time, it's a little bit tricky with the timing because PUC has a number of different audits going on. And so we want to ensure that we are, you know, paying attention to their capacity as well. What we'd like to target, what we said last time, I believe, is that we'd like to target end of this fiscal year for a draft report. There could be some time between when we get the draft report ready for review with the department and when we will do our final issuance. But we'd like to target the end of this fiscal year for that draft report, if possible. And just to remind, since there are some newer members on the committee, I'll provide some additional background. Because of the nature of our audit and CSA specifically, our draft work is considered confidential under city law. So what we have done in the past, for the past two audits, is the committee has appointed a representative essentially to read the draft report and provide us. They would meet with us and the department in the exit conference and have provided comments on our report on behalf of the RBOC. For the first two, I believe Member Camp was the representative selected. It's, you know, RBOC's prerogative who will be that member, but that's typically how that process has gone.
Okay, thank you for that update.
I have a question. I heard that the target for the draft is the end of fiscal year. What would cause us to miss that target? I heard from the response, it feels like that target is perhaps a bit soft. So I'd like to understand, what are some of the risks that would cause us to miss that target?
Yeah, no, thank you for that question. Typically, and I can also turn it over to the audit team here. It looks like Eugene and Tasha from HKA and Yano are both here as well. But typically, to perform our analysis, you know, we receive a lot of information and data from the department on the front end. As we go through the analysis, there may be things that come up. We may identify certain things that we have to ask questions about. Sometimes those could become a lot of back and forth, looking at additional information, trying to obtain that additional information, trying to perform that analysis. So sometimes we don't know necessarily where the audit is going to take us. And so sometimes in both of the previous audits, there have been some issues that have had a lot of back and forth, and that does take, it does take a significant amount of time. Is there anything that Tasha, you or Eugene want to add, other issues that might cause some delays?
This is Eugene Yano from Yano Accountancy Corporation. As some may know, my firm has been involved with PUC for 27 years running, and our firm has just rotated off what's called the water revenue requirement audit, which is the cost allocation of operating and capital costs of the water system between the city and the wholesale customers. That audit is ongoing now and started the beginning of March. Typically, PeopleSoft, that audit would be finished by the end of January. However, a number of things occurred. One, there was an auditor rotation because the city's audits went out to bid, and the new auditors have needed time to get up to speed. Plus, there was a delay at the city level of getting all the audits out, and the audits didn't get done until just before New Year's. So that has pushed finances audit schedule back a month and a half or 2 months. So that has been an ongoing thing. And that's really, and our firm's no longer involved, so we have absolutely no control over that. So, and that does take a lot, a significant amount of effort on PEC's part.
I hope that answers the committee's questions on that, but please, any follow-up is welcome as well.
I mean, I think I'd just like to get an understanding of what's the confidence level of the fiscal year end target. Forgive me if I'm interpreting incorrectly, but it feels like there's not a high level of confidence. But you can correct me if I'm interpreting that wrong.
We're still in the relatively early stages of field work, maybe early mid. So as we continue to get through field work, and see what issues come up, we'll provide updates on that timeline. Eugene and Tasha, I think as of right now, end of the fiscal year for a draft report is still, we're still on track for that as of right now. Is that correct?
Yes. And the thing was, is that if we look at phase two, we issued our draft report in mid-January, but it did, but be, with all the reviews and back and forth, it took 8 months between the time we issued our draft report and that report to get final. So there were that many. There were some significant issues that needed to be resolved. Because a number of the issues actually, PUC had to reach out to various other city agencies for things like citywide policies and that sort of stuff, and that actually took some time.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from the committee on this item?
Okay. I think we do have a public opportunity for public comment on this item. If there are any members of the public who would like to speak, please use the raised hand feature and we will get to you.
It appears that we don't have any speakers, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So that item is closed and will be continued.
I'll just note for the minute that this committee is taking no action on that, but it may appear on a future agenda.
Okay. We now have item number four, which is a presentation on the scope of ARBOC, and we have with us Deputy City Attorney Ortega to provide a presentation.
Thank you, guys. I'm happy to finally be able to present this to you. And John, you can feel free to introduce this PowerPoint to the record. Okay, so we have our history and scope of ARBOC. So back in June 1998, when I think most of us were probably in high school or maybe even before that, the PUC had experienced a rate freeze. So kind of in the years preceding this Prop 8 rate freeze, which was also pre the WSIP program, that $2.4 billion water program, the PUC regularly at that time was requesting utility rate increases to fund new water and wastewater capital improvements and to pay for the operation and maintenance of PUC water and wastewater collection, distribution, and treatment infrastructure. At that time, the power enterprise was still developing. For new capital projects, the PUC issued revenue bonds, requiring the approval of the Board of Supervisors for each financing. At the same time, these rate increases were being requested, including to support our water and our wastewater bonds, millions of dollars of excess PUC revenues that were being produced by Hetch Hetchy Power were being transferred to the general fund and spent on non-PUC expenses. And that those transfers predated Prop 218, so it was a very different legal landscape at the time those were being made. Back in June 1998, the PUC did not then have in place sophisticated long-term strategic planning, long-term capital improvement programs, long-range financial planning, and evaluations of alternative technologies. The PUC didn't have an internal audit bureau, and the PUC did not maintain its own separate suite of debt policies. So everything for PUC finance was being done and was very integrated with the general fund and being approved by the Board of Supervisors. So by 1998, the local ratepayers opposed this status quo. In June 1998, by Prop H, the San Francisco voters approved a freeze of the PUC's rates from January 1, 1998 through July 1, 2006, year rate freeze. And there were very few exceptions to when the PUC could raise rates during that time frame, and they were able to raise for debt service payment purposes, but there were very few other exceptions to the freeze. The PUC was significantly harmed by this rate freeze. Needed ratepayer dollars to fund the regional water collection and transmission system, so from the Tuolumne River headlands and Hetch Hetchy all the way down into San Francisco County and then down the peninsula to our partner agencies, which was FAW at the time and now BOSQA, all were suffering. We lacked the funds to fund the WSIP. And, you know, during the same time frame, the wastewater treatment facilities also were aging to a point where they required significant improvement, where we were undertaking environmental risks, including risks to the entire bay. All these risks were expanding as a result of us not being able to raise rates to pay for needed projects. By 2002, the PUC proposed a new path forward to regain its ability to raise rates and with greater accountability and flexibility. And this path supported the funding of WSIP, and then it had an estimated cost of $1.6 billion, and obviously WSIP became much more expensive as it was implemented. Prop E was approved by voters in November 2002, and this added Section 8B to the City and County's Charter. Prop E was aligned with the clear need for WSIP and the goals and objectives related to clean water. Proppy gave the PUC exclusive charge of the construction, management, supervision, maintenance, extension, expansion, operation, use, and control of all water, clean water, which is wastewater, and energy supplies and utilities of the city, as well as the PUC's real personal and financial assets. So one of the core provisions of Section 8E of the Charter and of Prop E was this separation and exclusive control concept for the PUC. Prop E also allowed the PUC to borrow money for revenue bonds and for short-term borrowing and other types of financing with a general ordinance approval from the board, but also specific financing by financing approval from the commission. So whereas before, every time the PUC needed to do a bond deal, we would go to the Board of Supervisors. Now we go to the supervisors less frequently for an overall borrowing ordinance, and then we have our borrowing resolutions that are approved by the PUC Commission. Prop E required the development of long-term capital, financial, and strategic plans to ensure that the PUC's utilities are operated efficiently and in accordance with best utility practice. This is in our San Francisco charter that we continue to, that we implement and continue to have these plans. And Prop E also required the PUC to exist as an independent revenue department, not subject to undue financial pressures to contribute to the city's general fund. So the transfers and the expectation that the PUC could be a source of funding for non-PUC projects was eliminated by this proposition. Prop E allowed the PUC to establish rates to maintain operation, maintenance, and financial needs of the system based on costs and sound budgeting and auditing procedures to protect retail ratepayers and to reduce interest paid on bonds and other indebtedness. It created a standalone rate fairness board to monitor rate setting and rate increases. So this board exists separate and apart from ARBOC and is looking specifically at rates and factors that underlie those rates. The rate fairness board still meets monthly, and I believe it met within the past couple of weeks. They usually meet on Friday afternoons. Prop E also required the PUC to create a citizens advisory committee to provide recommendations to the general manager, the Public Utilities Commission, and Board of Supervisors. The Citizen Advisory Committee also continues to meet and has subcommittees for the water, wastewater, and power enterprises. The provisions of Prop E and Section 8B of the City Charter remain in effect today, including the external oversight boards and the planning and rate setting provisions. I would note that the two boards I mentioned before, Rate Fairness and Citizens Advisory, as I was just mentioning with John earlier, are slightly different from ARBOC in the sense that they don't receive a financial set aside, and they also don't, they're not staffed by the city clerk and don't have some of the same legislative powers that ARBOC does. Now, as a companion proposition to Prop E, on the same November 2002 ballot, we placed Prop P, which is the proposition that creates the ARBOC. Prop P was put on the ballot specifically to support this concept in Prop E that the PUC's bond financing and borrowing can be done at the commission level. It supported the provisions of Prop E that allow the PUC to borrow money with just the general ordinance at the board level and with the commission resolution by resolution based approach. The ARBOC oversees the PUC use of utility revenue bond funds and ensures that those are spent in accordance with our bond resolutions and borrowing documents and with the PUC's capital budgeting. The ARBOC might also look for fraud in the bond program. The ARBOC reports to our mayor, our Board of Supervisors, and the Public Utilities Commission on whether bond funds are being used for authorized purposes. So this is the core scope of ARBOC from the Prop P language. More specifically, ARBOC purposes are laid out in Prop P, which have become embedded within the city's admin code. So the ARBOC may engage in the following tasks. Number one, inquiring into the disbursement and expenditure of PUC revenue bond proceeds only. So not all PUC revenues, but PUC revenue bond proceeds. And this can be done by receiving reports, financial statements, or materials related to the expenditure of revenue bond proceeds. Number two, the RBOC can hold public hearings to review the disbursement and expenditure of revenue bond proceeds. Number three, the RBOC can inspect facilities financed with revenue bond proceeds. And I believe that the RBOC from time to time has gone to Hetch Hetchy and the Southeast Treatment Plant and to different facilities where we have significant bond proceeds being expended. Number four, the RBOC can receive and review copies of PUC capital improvement plans for water, power, or wastewater infrastructure, where these are being, again, funded by revenue bond proceeds. Number five, RBOC can review efforts to maximize revenue bond proceeds by implementing cost-saving measures, including but not limited to all of the following: mechanisms designed to reduce the cost of site preparation and project design, so capital planning costs, recommendations regarding cost-effective and efficient use of core facilities, developing and using alternative technologies, and accessing sources of infrastructure funding, excluding bond refunding. So this is where some prior audits have fit themselves within this particular language where you're reviewing efforts. That work has been done using external resources, but that is work that really should be done at the RBOC level. Number six, the commissioning independent review section is limited to evaluating the disbursement and expenditure of revenue bond proceeds. So that's one of the things we use the set-aside fund for, is paying this for this independent review. To fund its work, the RBOC receives a set-aside of 1/20th of 1% of the gross proceeds from each issuance or sale of PUC revenue bonds. And we've talked about that amount in the past and how much is in the account. In no instance, since the RBOC's creation in 2002, so after over 20 years of review work, has RBOC, by an external audit or otherwise, found that any expenditures of PUC bond proceeds have been outside of the scope of our borrowing documents or authorizing resolution. And in no instance has RBOC found fraudulent expenditures involving revenue bond proceeds. The RBOC has never suggested that PUC bond programming or planned issuances should be paused, which is one tool that the RBOC does have if they were to identify significant fraud.
Can you, thank you for that. Can you explain that some more? Is that only, is the ability to pause bond programming or issue only subject to if fraud has been detected?
It is subject to an identification of fraud or a serious misspending of bond proceeds outside of the scope of our bond documents.
Okay, so it's only if there's fraud involved.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And you said it's only a recommendation. It's not something that this board can authorize.
Correct. It needs to be approved by the Board of Supervisors and the Commission, and it would be quite a significant undertaking, and it would need to occur only after identification of something quite significant. And again, over the past in excess of 20 years, nothing's been found significant or otherwise. So,
okay. Yeah. So just clarification then. I think what I read in your presentation, which is great, thank you. I think what I read is RBOC does not have in its purview the ability to pause bond programming if, for instance, projections of water sales are too high.
Correct. And okay, that's we're going to get to the next slide, which are things that are outside our box scope.
Fair enough. Thank you.
So outside of our box scope, as I mentioned before, the PUC, and this is in Section 8B of the Charter, so this is a core provision of Proposition E that we talked about before. The PUC retains exclusive charge of the construction, management, supervision, maintenance, extension, expansion, operation, use, and control of all water, clean water, so that's wastewater, and energy supplies and utilities of the city, as well as the PUC's real personal and financial assets. This means that operations, management, staffing, data, inventory, maintenance, and performance audits regarding PUC infrastructure and assets remain within the exclusive scope of the PUC, and outside of the scope of RBOC. RBOC is limited to and focused upon confirming whether the bond proceeds used to fund such infrastructure have been properly spent. Audits of the PUC's overall revenues, expenditures, real estate, rates, and other non-bond financing, including grant financing and state and federal funding, also fall outside of RBOC scope. PUC evolution. In the last 20-plus years following the approvals of Prop E and P in support of WSIP and later CISIP, the PUC has developed highly sophisticated internal teams to address the following. Long-term strategic planning that's handled at our enterprise level and also PUC-wide, and it's managed by various AGMs. Long-term capital improvement programs. Those are handled at the enterprise level and guided by various AGMs. And this includes capital program budgeting, and it's all done in accordance with Proposition 218, which was passed in 1996. There's long-range financial planning that's handled at the enterprise level and PUC-wide, and this includes consideration of overall rate affordability and includes guidance from a dedicated rate setting and a financial planning team. And we do ongoing evaluations of alternative technologies. And I think a technology-focused and a future-focused mindset is very much a part of the PUC's current culture. The PUC has created an internal audit bureau. So these are its inside auditors taking an external view, as Irella will remind us. These audits, you know, look at everything from privacy and data compliance to inventory. All they do so many different internal audits for us. But with this external approach and lens, the team is guided by Irella Blackwood, and the group sits independently from the PUC's finance team, which is guided by AGM Nancy Hom. The PUC retains a highly sophisticated capital financing team, guided by Nikolai Flora. This team advances industry-leading debt, tax, and securities law compliance practices. And the PUC now has its own separate suite of debt policies, which we may have had presentations on those in the past. The PUC has evolved into an organization that highly values oversight and builds in reiterative review throughout its enterprises and within finance. So there are always multiple sets of eyes looking at things and reviewing. And the PUC responds to RBOC's independent work historically by promptly providing RBOC and its auditors with requested information and support. So that's where the PUC is today. I'm sure you have questions.
Can we go back to slide 10?
Yep. And I'm going to send this around after the presentation today.
Yeah, I think Clerk Carroll sent it out to the group.
I have sent it out, and it also will be connected as a portion of the minutes that publish for this meeting, so everyone will be able to review it there as well.
Okay, thanks. I missed that.
Okay, comments or questions from the committee?
So I think my question starts on slide 7, where you went over the RBOC purposes. I just wanted to clarify on that. So when we talk about PUC revenue bond proceeds, that's like post the bonds being sold. So again, not all PUC revenues, but I guess the question is, do we get involved in the pre-sale of revenue bonds? Is that part of it, or is it only once it's sold? That's kind of in our purview. It's looking at it post that.
Correct. It's in the purview after the bonds are sold. And you can think about RBOC as an important compliance partner for the capital financing team to be providing a second set of eyes and a second audit to ensure that those bond proceeds are being spent in accordance with our documents and our authorizations. Mm-hmm. It's a really actually a nice thing for the PUC to have in place for purposes of maintaining our tax exemption, for purposes of maintaining our best practices and complying with our debt policies. So it's a partnering organization, but it's not a planning organization, and it's not the role of RBOC is not to provide advice to the capital planning group or the capital financing group or the financial planning group on how to structure the borrowing.
I'm just going to repeat some of this back at you and hopefully that you have to test my understanding. So, and bring it back to what prompted this, which is this draft RFP document, right? Mm-hmm. So under RBOC's purview, we're allowed and expected to review how bond proceeds are used to potentially fund maintenance of infrastructure, but not the maintenance of the infrastructure.
So bond proceeds generally wouldn't be used to fund the infrastructure. Generally, bond proceeds are going to be used for the construction of new infrastructure. So if you think about a bond being like a mortgage on the infrastructure, we are taking on the debt up front and spreading the cost of these new projects out over a 30-year, typically a 30-year time frame, and paying interest as we go along. We wouldn't be using bond proceeds, and Nicolai, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but we don't typically use, we typically use our PAYGO revenues for maintenance work, and we wouldn't be funding not any kind of, we wouldn't be funding maintenance or non-new, nothing that's a new infrastructure.
Okay, that's really helpful. I haven't quite put that together, which can't fix it, but... is that the core problem essentially with the RFP, the previous draft of the RFP, that we were looking at maintenance, but it was
the review at the maintenance, and it was the review of the performance, the way that the performance of the infrastructure was being reviewed. And it was kind of a performance audit of the infrastructure rather than confirming and understanding that this was the infrastructure that was built with these bonds. And there's a fine line between understanding the infrastructure, which is within our box scope, right? You can go look at the infrastructure, you can kind of make sure it's there and make sure that it was really built in the way that was expected, and delving into a more in-depth performance audit of, is this really the most optimally functioning piece of equipment.
Okay. So, and that's
that was just a step too far.
Okay. Thank you.
So, do you think this is something that maybe can be solved a little bit in a way that is within these purposes? Like, I see a little bit of overlap with, for example, item 5 on the list.
I think the best thing to do, and I know we have a new committee for the new audit, is to, in light of this information, take another look at the scoping and prepare a draft that we work on in an attorney-client privileged way outside of a public meeting. And then when we get to something that better aligns with this scope, then we can run that through the contracting partner in the city attorney's office and make sure that it's blessed and that it's in a near final form or final form, and then bring that document back to RBOC to talk about. I don't think we should be, I wouldn't advise trying to navigate the full parameter of that audit in a public meeting.
Makes sense.
And we probably should scrap that draft and start fresh, right? Because I think fundamentally that draft is looking at funding of maintenance and performance, which is outside of the scope, so there's probably not much to keep there.
Yeah, I defer to RBOC to how it wants to handle that, but I think that that could be a good approach to just to take a fresh start.
Okay.
But it's really up to you guys how you want to move forward with on your with your committee.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, I know you guys can do this longer, but for this number 5, I actually think it's a little confusing, I guess, in terms of what the role is. This is the...
It's on slide 8, and this is where audits that were not simply bean counting bond proceeds have developed in the past. This and then a look for fraudulent expenditure bond proceeds. Those are the two areas within Prop P that make, you know, give RBOC a greater authority beyond just basic accounting for where the bond proceeds spent, right? And so I think that's a really good paragraph to keep in mind as you're developing audits going forward. You know, kind of contrasting this with slide 10 and trying to fit your work better within.
It's on the bottom right.
You know, better trying to fit the work within item number 5 that's on slide 8.
Because some of this is more like, right, I guess what I'm reading this to be is more like for the construction of actual projects that were using bond financing, what were the cost-saving measures or what was the cost, what was the construction efficiency, looking at that kind of thing, it seems like.
Kind of capital planning costs. And, you know, we borrow the money and oftentimes we, because of the way the PUC, and Nikolai can describe this further, because of our programmatic approach to the borrowing program, projects are under construction that are well-timed with our borrowing, or we'll borrow short-term, but we'll do some short-term borrowing to pay up front, and then we'll wrap all of that into the bigger bond. Nikolai has described this before. So the borrowing is typically going to predate the construction. And that's where looking at things like capital, you know, design costs and capital planning costs can have value because of that time space. That's the way I read and understand number 5. And then as we have different types of experts on RBOC, you know, to the extent that RBOC wants to review technology or, you know, cost-effective, efficient use of core facilities, and there's awareness of that. I know at one point discussions of green bonds had been very much a top topic for RBOC, so that fits within the accessing sources of infrastructure funding or fits within the terms of the bonds. And those are the kinds of things that RBOC's done historically that fit within item number 5.
Is there enough tribal knowledge in this room to give a concrete example of practically what happened for 5.2 and 5.3, which is practical example of RBOC in the past? What kind of recommendation was issued for the more cost-effective or efficient use of something for a core facility? Or an example of what did the RBOC recommend to employer develop an alternate technology for more efficiency? Like, do we have a concrete example?
I don't know. But as part of our work on, you know, as you guys work on as a committee on the new audit, we could pull prior audits and take a look to see if that's been done before. I joined the city attorney's office last August, and I think we have 2 new members.
Yeah, I think that predates any of us.
Predates all of us, yeah.
It would be very helpful to understand what was done in the past.
The audits are all, you know, public documents and part of the record, so we could work with Clerk Carroll to have those pulled as part of a supportive package for the committee that's working on the new work.
I mean, it's quite possible that that doesn't exist.
That it wasn't done.
Yeah.
Actually, my understanding is that before 2019, the RBOC had the audit work had been extremely limited, and so I don't know.
Yeah, I think before the 3 audits that we have been working on the last couple of years. I think it had been several years before that, that there had been any audits at all that were done. I don't know if Mr. Yano or any of the others
would have more. I went back and looked at the record, it seemed like ARBOC was doing more, rather than commissioning independent audits, was doing more thought work itself and was doing things like going to view facilities and just thinking about overall concepts like green bonds or like different things that those members had an interest in and awareness of to provide suggestions and guidance to PUC Capital Finance.
If I may, just responsive to the ARBOC documentation that's available for public review and also for review by the new members of ARBOC. If you go to the SFPUC's website and just search for the subpage for ARBOC, you will find a drop-down menu that will provide you with all of the annual reports and previous audits and things like that that we have on file, all of them publicly viewable there. So if you want to dig through that, that's where we have that documentation for you.
Thank you.
And that website is maintained for us by the SFPUC staff. So thank you to Benito Capuyan for taking care of all that stuff for us.
Okay. Any other comments or questions from the committee?
I have a brief question, if this is beyond the scope. Catherine, I thought I read earlier that the audit committee is an internal audit committee, which has an external view. As opposed to being external audit committee. What's the rationale behind that?
It's part of the PUC's reiterative review process. So we always have external auditing going on. The PUC has its own external auditing team. Nancy Hom, our AGM of Finance, has an auditing background herself, a very strong auditing background.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, IRELA's department maintains a lot of independence and is very highly sophisticated, and so that just provides the PUC with an additional internal check before issues might be spotted externally to ensure that we are, or that the PUC is auditing itself proactively and in an independent way.
Okay.
I should say the PUC is, I represent the PUC
I wasn't sure if that internal audit team is always audited by an external team consistently, or if the PUC relies on that internal audit team to do things that in a different organization an external audit team would otherwise be charged with.
I don't know, but you could certainly ask IRELA for a presentation on her group and how they function. I know that they come to present periodically, and I think Christina Anderson from IRELA's team is on the call today, or who works closely with IRELA is on today. Within the ARBOC's purview, you can certainly ask for staff presentations that relate to the topics that you guys are looking at.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Cork, this item is similar to item 5 as well, planning for future audits. Can we say we're taking these two items together?
We've had a pretty substantive discussion at this point for this item. I think it's a little too late to roll them into each other.
Okay.
Sorry to say.
Okay. So unless anyone has comments specifically on the presentation, maybe we could then move on to item 5 and discuss how we're going to move forward. So maybe if we could have an opportunity now for public comment specifically on this presentation, the scope of ARBOC. Please use the raised hand feature. Looks like we have a speaker.
Mr. Warner, I'll start your time once I hear your voice.
Okay, thanks so much. This is a fascinating review, and it's a little troubling. What happened in 1998 is at risk of happening again. And I don't have any hidden agenda here. I'm normally advocating water issues, not financial issues. And just in the context, you know, over the next 10 years, the SFPUC is projecting 8.1% annual increases in rates, assuming they achieve their demand targets. And there's little to no risk analysis in the presentations. And I don't understand why there's not risk analysis. And I think without the risk analysis, commissioners don't have the ability to understand the risks that the SFPUC is taking on. And for example, I just did a quick look at the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California's budgeting slides, and they do include risk analysis. So I'm, you know, disturbed by that, and the fact that the numbers are so big just makes this troubling. The other big problem here, and the history was so good to hear, thank you so much. You know, I've spoken to the Rate Fairness Board, and I've spoken many times to the Citizens Advisory Committee. Neither of them have anywhere close to the financial expertise sitting in this room. I don't expect they would get the importance of risk analysis like you do. And so then I guess where that leaves me is, given what's been described here, maybe you can't do anything, which is immensely frustrating because you seem to be the most powerful financial subcommittee or the most financially educated subcommittee of any of the SFPUC committees. And as I mentioned, you know, neither GM Herrera nor the commissioners nor COO Flynn have this. You know, is there any chance this issue, if you're willing to take it on, could fit under the proposal number 4 of, you know, just reviewing the capital planning process and whether there's been an adequate risk review? But anyway, it's up to you guys if you want to try this. I'm just so scared that, you know, each year we wait, it just gets worse and worse, and this is a disaster starting to happen. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave Warner, for sharing your comments. Do we have anyone further who has public comment on this agenda item number 4? Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Public comment is closed. So I think we will move on to item 5 and not take action at this time on item 4. So item 5, planning for future audits. This was the item in the agenda where we would typically talk about this RFP. It was something that former member Tang, I think, first brought up about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and took a while to get to the point where, and with Vice Chair Boothie's assistance and work on it as well, got to the point where there was an RFP working with the Controller's Office, CSA. So it sounds like, you know, some, or at least part of that scope of the RFP is outside of these this purview and the scope of RBOF. So I guess the question is, where do we go from here? And it was suggested maybe we come up, form a subcommittee to work under attorney-client privilege with the city attorney's office and CSA to try to come up with a scope of a another type of audit that is within this scope and within our purview that's different from the beam counting audits that we've done the past couple of years. Any thoughts at this time? Is this something that we maybe want to take some time to reflect about before going forward, or do we have some initial thoughts? Anyone interested in being involved in a subcommittee to begin work on this?
Can we, you have more knowledge of the history than we do here. Maybe can you review for 2 minutes how previous plans were thought through and devised such that those led to the bean counting audits that we had as of yesterday?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember how exactly those were formed. Maybe some of the folks from the CSA or Mr. Yano may have more knowledge about this. As I recall, those were contemplated before I came on the committee.
Okay.
I don't know when the contract was initially executed. I know those were delayed for, you know, several months, if not years, due to the pandemic. This committee didn't meet for probably about 8 months or so, I'm thinking, in 2020.
Uh-huh.
So
So, yeah, I don't recall exactly how that was initially
Is there somebody at this organization that's responsible for the RFP that they could give us a 10-minute preso on?
So which RFP are you? I guess I just want to clarify, because we did three, they're doing three financial audits, right? Mm-hmm. There was three phases, and then they're working on a fourth RFP, which is going to be for sort of a different
a separate
kind
scope.
Of a non-Beacon County.
Okay.
Which has essentially been canned, right? So we could.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's the one that wasn't
per
our purview.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
And
right.
So that's the one we need the subcommittee to work on, which kind of gets at the number five of our kind of jurisdiction of.
The five sub two and three.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or
okay,
that
yeah.
kind of grouping of not just looking at how the proceeds are being spent, but how
efficiency and
all
yeah.
that kind
yeah.
of stuff. Yeah. So I think that's the what this item is about. It's not like the three previous ones. That
correct.
On the way. It's more about, did we want to do a different kind of audit, right?
Okay. Yes. And we did have a presentation at one point from a consultant who had done work, I think, for FEMA and a number of different agencies. You were here. But basically, it was somebody who the former chair had found, I guess, just doing a little bit of research online in terms of if the an audit basically to evaluate the performance and the cost benefit of the various infrastructure work. It was a presentation, I'm thinking, probably shortly after we first came in person here, maybe or 2022 or something like that. But I think the RFP as drawn up was a bit different from how this consultant said that he typically did audits with his firm.
I can talk you through how the canned RFP was developed. I mean, I think the process still applies, right? The content was inappropriate, but the process is probably the same.
I think just in light of the fact that you're going to be developing, and we should use the word working group as opposed to subcommittee to just make sure it's not a public body and to make sure that we retain our attorney-client privilege. But in light of the fact that the working group's going to be advancing a new document, I think those kind of conversations in, you know, anybody who's interested should join the working group should happen at that working group.
It can't be a quorum of the committee.
But
which
I would
point as the whole committee.
I would just advise working through those topics in an attorney-client privileged way.
I'll just make an observation from my green perspective. Like, so my observation is, like, it's tough to know what kind of questions to ask for a new audit that might fit into Section 5, Sub 2, and 3 without knowing how revenue bonds are currently being spent for a particular project. So, again, from an amateur perspective, it would be helpful to see a current project that is spending revenue bonds and understanding how that bond is being spent on the project. And then that would possibly give us, me at least, an idea of what kind of questions to ask.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
That's a presentation you could request from staff. From Nikolai and his team could probably prepare something like that. Just that's an example of how capital budgeting and how bond proceeds are applied to Project X, whatever that might be.
Which might be good, given the new folks on the board.
I don't know
the last time you guys had such an update.
No, I mean, and we do have that on the list of pending issues, you know, water system improvement program update, power enterprise, clean power update. It's been a while since we've gotten, you know, received presentations on either of those topics. So I think with a couple of new board members, that would be useful, as well as perhaps the site tour at some point in the next several months, if possible. So maybe that's something we can.
It feels like that's a bit of homework collectively we could engage with that. And then such a working group could convene and start to ideate on what questions to ask.
Sure.
that something we need to codify in an action item? Or
I don't think so. I don't think that would be an action item. I think it's just a matter of you know, how quickly those presentations, how many presentations we need and how quickly they can be scheduled at one of these meetings.
Okay.
And then, you know, what types of questions come up from those presentations.
Does such a presentation, sorry.
It's okay.
Does such a presentation need to be in a public format or can it be in a non-public format?
I would advise that a presentation that is educational for the entire committee should be done in the public forum the same way that I did the training today.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And, we do have, slides available from previous meetings. If you're interested in looking at those, we can probably dig them up and send them around. I don't know how out of date they would be at this point.
I guess I'll just ask, especially because I know you've been working on the other RFP. I mean, are you good to kind of hold for a little while, or did you want to get back on it? Or?
No, that's fine. I mean, I think we're starting fresh, so it's, I think it was educational to work with CSA on it, and they were really helpful partners.
It was a lot of time to get to.
Yeah,
it was a lot of time and work to get to the point where we got to.
Sorry, some comments.
Yeah. Okay, any other comments? Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about it. I feel like a bit of education would be helpful for the next public meeting, which is maybe a 10 or 15 minute prezo from the right people that says, here's a project that we're currently working on. That's current, that's not in the past, that's currently financed by some revenue bond, and this is how we spend, and these are some issues that we've run across, and these are some questions. So that way it kind of gets us thinking on what kinds of questions should we ask that might fit into Section 5, Sub 2 or 3.
Okay.
Do we agree?
Well, we had that conversation here. Number 8 is our planning for future.
That's right. So. Yeah, okay.
Okay, yeah, we can get back to that once we get to number 8 and discuss timing and not. Okay, any other comments or questions from the committee? Okay, let's go to public comment then on agenda item number 5. If there's any members of the public that would like to speak, please use the raised hand feature.
Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers for agenda item number 5.
Okay, public comment is closed. And we will move on to item 6 with no action taken on item 5. Item 6 is the ARBOC 2023 annual report. It's actually a fiscal year 22-23 annual report, which is attached with the agenda online. If everyone has gotten a chance to review. Well, I suppose two of our members were not actually on the committee during fiscal year 22-23. But if you have any comments, nevertheless, please let us know. Comments or questions?
I just had a logistical question, actually. Did y'all write this? I who writes this?
I think it's mostly... Mr. Carroll, right?
I didn't write a word of it.
No. I think Shirley wrote an updated.
It's probably, I think it's sort of a working document year to year that just gets tweaked based on. You didn't put in the agenda items? Or?
I put in the agenda
items. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know that was the most useful part of the report.
And I think that Nicola.
Please come forward to the microphone.
Your question's answered unambiguously. This is entirely your report. Shirley Al reached out to ask for specific information, which we provided, but it's your report.
Okay. Thank you.
And I will note, Chair Holliver, I want to give it one more final polish before we send it to the board.
Okay.
Page
Okay. Do we need to approve this document?
No.
I mean,
well, I think yes, we do.
You need to approve it, but there's no reason to hold it. I just wanted to do more of a.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Final edit.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Just, you know, comments and that kind of
stuff. Okay. Yeah, it's not a legal document, but
it's a Board of Supervisors facing document, so I just want to make sure that we deliver to our commission, to our general manager, and to our board.
Okay.
May I ask a question related to that in that case? Does that mean you want to hold off on the approval action for this one until later? I don't understand.
I don't think we need to. I just want to give like a gloss, like a...
Okay.
Like
copy edit.
Okay.
Okay. If there are no comments or questions, let's go to public comment. If any members of the public would like to speak on this item, item six, please use the raise hand feature.
And Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers for public comment on agenda item number six.
Okay. So with that, let's move, is there a motion to approve the annual report?
So moved.
We have a second?
I can second.
Okay. A motion from Vice Chair Boothby and a second from Member Feaster. We can have a roll call vote, please.
On that motion to approve as presented, offered by Member Boothie and seconded by Member Visser, noting that Member Camp is absent. Member Leung?
Yes.
Leung?
Yes.
Yes. Member Boothie?
Aye.
Boothie, aye. Member Visser?
Aye.
Visser, aye. Chair Holliver?
Aye.
Holliver, aye. Mr. Chair, there are four ayes and Member Camp absent.
Okay, thank you. So item six is approved, and I will be presenting the annual report at the PUC Commission meeting, which I believe is April 15th.
So just a question, and then it's also presented to the Board of Supervisors?
I don't believe so.
I think it's just giving to them.
Yeah. And it's posted on the website as well. Okay, so let's move now to item number seven, which is the approval of minutes of the February 13th meeting, and those are included with the agenda as well. There's one minor comment I made to the clerk earlier.
ARBOC members, I neglected to include the seconders that offered seconds for the nomination of officers and the nomination of officers item. I will review my notes and include those in the final version that I post.
Okay.
But otherwise, I'm not preparing any other changes unless you have requests for changes.
Yeah. Any comments, corrections? Okay. Seeing none, do we have any public comment on the meeting minutes, item number seven?
I'll delay for a moment, but it appears, Mr. Chair, that we have no comments on the form of the minutes.
Okay, so public comment is closed, and we can take a motion to approve.
So moved.
Okay, I'll second that motion.
A motion offered by Vice Chair Boothie and seconded by Chair Holliver to approve the minutes with clerical changes. On that motion, Member Leung?
Aye.
Leung, aye. Member Boothie?
Aye.
Boothie, aye. Member Visser?
Aye.
Visser, aye. Chair Holliver?
Aye.
Holliver, aye. Mr. Chair, there are four ayes.
Okay, thank you very much. The meeting minutes are approved. And we will move to item eight, which is announcements, comments, questions, and future agenda items. We have the list of scheduled meetings listed here. If anybody has any conflicts with any of these dates, please let us know. It's possible some of these meetings may be canceled or changed if there are any issues. And then a list of potential meeting topics. As mentioned below, we have not had presentations on the water system, or improvement program or power enterprise and clean power in quite some time. So that may be useful for our new members to receive those presentations. We also, item H, planning for a future site visit. That's something we haven't done in a while as well. We did the, three of us did the Hetch Hetchy system. That was, no, it was the end of May, so it was right before my budget started for, right when I had a little bit of downtime in my schedule. End of May of last year, we toured the Hetch Hetchy water system. It was an excellent tour. It's something that needs to be planned usually quite a ways in advance. Probably not going to happen this year, but something to definitely keep an eye on. We also toured, I'm thinking in towards the end of maybe November of 2022.
Yes. It was like 2 days before my
due date. Right, yes. we toured the Oceanside Treatment Plant over by the San Francisco Zoo. We have not toured Southeast Plant in some time. So that made, and I know there's been a lot of work going on there, so even if you did attend the last tour, I'm sure there's something new there that hasn't been seen. So maybe that's something that we could work to schedule at some point, you know, later in the spring or early summer, if there's time available. I think it's usually something that can be organized pretty quickly, so it doesn't require travel. in the past, and also if it's something, if it's a tour with where a quorum of the committee is present, it does have to be scheduled as a an agendized public meeting. Yes, Mr. Sklar?
Then Nikolai Sklar, Capital Finance Director. Given this first time with new chair, new vice chair, I do want to just make sure it's clear that staff does not initiate presentations and site visits. So you let us know what you'd like us to arrange, and we can reach out to the appropriate parties and check on availability for your meetings. But we need explicit requests from the committee.
Okay.
Do they need to happen in a public meeting, or can they be?
If all of the members of the commission or the committee are there, then it does need to be an official Brown Act noticed public meeting.
So I meant the explicit request for support.
You could do it by consensus, yes.
Okay.
But it might be worthwhile to make a request of staff for some dates, and then in a future meeting, manage the scheduling in a public manner.
In the past, what I've seen with this body and with other bodies that I've clerked when we're discussing future agenda items, when there's a request and there's one member that really wants to run with it, the success of that comes from that person spearheading it and coordinating with staff in order to make sure it's a presentation and schedules are clear and things like that. But you can do that directly.
Thank you.
So do we have any consensus to request those items, perhaps the water system, items A and B?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if like requesting one to start is right, or do we, I don't know how much work it is to do one versus the other, so.
I think, you know, as long as if we put them on the radar of the PUC staff, you know, maybe we don't necessarily have them in the same meeting, but at least get the, you know, proper staff members lined up to be ready to present on them. And then also a site tour for the Southeast Treatment Plant.
I'm happy to champion on my own the work a meeting for a site tour, because I think you mentioned that the success of a site tour is dependent on that one person to arrange
it. That's right.
I'm happy to champion that. I think I'd like to ask, because you two have been on site multiple site tours before. Like from our perspective here, the one do you visit, right? Because you visited multiple sites before, what did you feel was like the key learning that you, like this site, oh, you had a key learning, whereas this site, maybe you didn't learn as much. Like, what should you look for? What should we look for when we want to visit a place to learn about?
I've only visited one, so okay. I'm going to quickly remove myself from that. I've actually seen the Oceanside one, but that was years before I was on the Arbuck in a bit of a different setting.
Sure.
And the Hetch Hetchy visit is extensive. It's a ton of planning for staff, right? You're essentially joining
It's an overnight trip.
Yeah, it's okay. An overnight trip. And it's visually spectacular, but it's a really meaningful way to understand the complexity and the scale of the system.
Okay.
And I was lucky to go with Eric and Dan, who's not here today, and a number of other PC staff from across the organization. It was, and Chair Hallgrove was really great. Really incredible to just understand how complex and fragile to some extent like the whole system is. I actually haven't done as a formal part of the Arbuck, any of the local site visits, except what was done while we were on the way to Hetch Hetchy. And I drove by and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we drove by the Sunset Reservoir.
Yeah, but we didn't get out.
A couple others on the peninsula as well.
Yeah. Do you have a sense on how much you learned from Hetch Hetchy versus how much you learned from
I mean, I don't think it's a competition or anything. I think you learn a lot from all of it, but I think the other thing about the Southeast plant is just, and this was shortly after, that's actually the first meeting I had when I was appointed at the end of November 2019, I believe it was, just the size and scale of it in, one location. I don't live in San Francisco, so I don't pay, sewer bills here, but to know what, you're paying for with those bills and how much critical infrastructure is needed to support the system is pretty interesting.
I will say, I will step out of my attorney advisory role for 1 second and say I did a Southeast treatment plant tour within the past 2 months, and it's amazing. It's a really cool facility to go see, and I think in light of your questions about projects that are being currently funded by bond proceeds, it's the perfect place to go.
Right.
Yeah.
That's where most of, a large amount of the recent activity has been on that project.
So do I reach out to somebody at that plant? Or
you go knock on the door.
In terms of site visits, you can communicate to us which facilities you'd like to see.
Okay.
Remember, not all of our facilities are bond financed. We use a lot of federal and state loans. We use cash as well. But and then when it comes to large projects, particularly Southeastern and some of the other projects that are active construction sites, there'll be considerations in terms of safety and what's happening on the site, so that they can help suggest times when you'll have best access.
So just to reiterate for my own edification, I reach out to you offline, correct?
Yeah. I think we're doing that right now.
Request it right now.
We would like to request it.
What sort of time frame are you hoping for? Something sooner, something later in the summer, that kind of thing?
Personally, I would think that the sooner we can, if the Southeast treatment plant is bond financed, then the sooner that we could do it, the better, because then we learn faster.
Great. I'd agree with that.
And,
thank you.
Another consideration you can think about is, remember, this is a project that is ongoing.
Okay.
So bonds are not necessarily issued. Remember that at the SF, for those who are newer on the commission, we finance our bonds very differently than perhaps the agency you work with and other agencies do. We have hundreds of projects going at once, right? And we finance on a programmatic basis. And one of the ways we manage that we don't have bond proceeds just sitting around unexpended is we use commercial paper to issue first and then take that commercial paper out with long-term bonds. So for example, and the point I wanted to make is that to the extent that you are working now on audits, you might want to think about those projects or other projects to visit, but certainly happy to take you to Southeastern, but just to understand how timing, yes, exactly,
yeah.
The life cycle of financing.
I mean, if the Southeast project is an example of commercial paper funding some activity there, which bond proceeds then go back to the commercial paper, if that's true, then I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a $2 billion project. Well, maybe not that plant entirely, but the sewer system, SSIP, is a $2 billion project. So quite a bit of bond-funded infrastructure that is over there.
We can certainly work to arrange for that.
Thank you.
And I don't know if this, I guess to me it would be helpful. I know we talked about maybe having either A or B as an update provided. And so maybe it is, we do the update first and then schedule the tour so that we have a little more information about the overall project before we are then sent out to look at the tour. That might be a good timing, even though it'd be nice to see it. It might be good to get the update first and then schedule kind of the site visit after we've had an opportunity for that.
Bear in mind on these system updates, the commission is receiving quarterly reports, and so you may also want to think about the cadence of when those are timed relative to the commission's presentation.
Yeah, it would make sense for us to work out for your team to present this one set. Essentially do the same or abbreviated version of the presentation to us right after we prepare it for the commission.
Okay. Yeah, so if we can get an update on, you know, timing of those presentations and some potential dates for Southeast treatment plant tour, that would be great. And if there are any other comments or questions on item 8 or any announcements or other suggestions, ideas from the committee.
So I will record the requests for agenda items A and B. And you and I can work in the background
okay.
of preparing appropriate agendas for each of those, and then also potentially an agenda item for planning for future site visits, including what we have listed for H as a discussion item at a future agenda, and you and I can work that out.
Okay. And then it looks like also item G, it says may be scheduled in spring 2024. So maybe if we could have an update on when that can be added to an agenda item, so don't lose sight of that. Okay.
Just a suggestion, perhaps, to add to this alphabet at the end of 8. Do we want to spend a little time / effort thinking about, recruitment is the right word, but like making sure we're not so close to quorum for every meeting.
it was nice to have one person back.
I assume Member Kemp will be back at some point, but we don't actually have a clear window right on when that
and
is.
And that was on the list at some point and got taken off.
I can add it.
Yeah.
Did I hear there was another potential member coming?
There's another current member who is out of the country for a while and therefore can't make these meetings. Oh, I don't know about another potential member.
I don't, not as far as I know.
There's now a vacancy for the second seat replacing Ettore.
From the Board of Supervisors, right?
It would be an appointee from the Board of Supervisors, and we have updated the vacancy notice listed online that the supervisors and their aides consult in order to know what kind of seats and in what bodies there is a need. The appointment process take some time at the Board of Supervisors because it has to be approved by the full board as a motion. And the former ARBOC clerk, Victor Young, is the Rules Committee clerk that handles all of that stuff. His cubicle is immediately next to mine. If I hear anything about an appointee, I'll let you all know. But as of yet, I haven't heard anything. Thank you.
And then there's also one vacancy appointed by the controller's office, by the controller.
Which we have a new controller.
Yes.
Since the last time that Chair Leal reached out. I don't know how in the weeds they are with transition work, but it could not hurt to at some point remind this new controller that we have a vacancy.
So maybe, you know, we have staff from the controller's office on the call today. If maybe you could help work that up the chain of command, that would be helpful. Oh, yes, Mr. Scarlett.
I'm not sure that it's within your
we don't direct their staff
to recruit other members. Each of those offices has been formed of and as Catherine mentioned, the controller's office has undergone some change.
Understood.
So.
Okay.
I agree with and share the concern. I don't know that having a recruitment agenda item in the future is going to be very productive, given that the different appointment bodies are aware of the vacancies. But as far as informing you all about where those things stand, I'll be sure to let you know if I hear anything related to the board appointment.
Then perhaps no need to add it to the trail. Okay.
All right. Do we have any public comment on this item, agenda item number 8?
Delaying for a moment to see if we have any speakers who wish to provide public comments on agenda item number 8. This will be the last opportunity for public comment at today's meeting, and it relates to future agenda items. And, Mr. Chair, it appears we have no speakers.
Okay. So, looks like we are able to adjourn. The next meeting is scheduled for April 9th. So we will send out reminders to everyone and hope everyone is able to attend, and the clerk and I will work on making sure we have, and the vice chair will make sure that we have an agenda for that meeting. So with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
Thank you.